Welcome one, welcome all, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 20, coming at you. When 900 years old you reach, look as good, you will not. And that we're going to talk about, because we're going to talk about gaming marathons, which I think age you a little bit. Howdy, everybody. This is Portal Gaming Podcast, which is a product of a store located in Manchester, Connecticut, called The Portal. For more information, you can check us out at www.timemachineportal.com, or you can find us and like us on Facebook, The Portal Store. And I am your host, The Brant, and with me, as always, is
your co-host, Brian.
Awesome. Hey, Brian, happy 20th. This is our 20th anniversary. So we're 20 years old into this podcast now. Settlers of Catan, I think, is 20 years old.
Well, I missed one, right? It's my 19th, right?
I guess so, yeah.
So
there you go.
Next week, it'll be my 20th.
Yeah. Oh, I guess we're not 20 years old. We're 20 episodes old. We're like around a year, though. So happy anniversary.
Oh, was it?
Around here, right? In May last year. So anyway. thanks everybody for listening, and we'll keep going here. So let's see, upcoming events. We've got the Silk City Board Game Group, which will be meeting as they do every month. This is going to be on Saturday, May 21st, from 12 to 4:30 at the Manchester Public Library, and so definitely come and check it out. How was the last one, Brian?
Yeah, no, they've all been great, and you know, hopefully we keep building off of that momentum. I know it's starting to get nice out, so people might not be as attuned to going inside for that amount of time, but, you know, we still get a great turnout, and it's still, like, it's still awesome just to kind of teach some new games and get people excited about games.
Yeah, and it's like a new crowd
to
get involved with, which is always fun. So if you haven't checked one out, definitely check them out. If you go regularly, keep going.
Yeah.
Because it's a good time. So there's that. So that's what we have for upcoming events. For more information, again, you can check us out on the web and find all those up-to-date things, or just call the store to find out about other things that are going on. There's constantly little tournaments and other little things that we don't always announce on here, but we try to give you the big highlights. So that's what's happening. So let's move on to what's on your table. So these are games that we've been playing lately. I finally acquired Big Book of Madness. So this is a game that came in a while ago, and I was like, oh, that looks pretty cool. But no, I think, you know, I'm not sure how good it is. You know, thematically, it looked really cool to me. You know, it's, you're all mages in a mage school. Of course, Harry Potter comes to mind. And you have to go down into the basement and open the Big Book of Madness because your exams are the next day. And you're afraid you're going to fail them, and you're hoping this book holds the secrets. But no, all it holds is monsters. And now you have to fight the monsters and close the book and run back upstairs and hope nobody notices. But I love the artwork. I love that theme of mages and casting spells, and it's a co-op, and all that stuff really intrigued me. But I kind of said, I'll come get it another time. And then it disappeared, and then it was out of stock, and then I was trying to chase it down. And I was trying to find copies on Amazon, but then they were out of them, and they shot way up over the price, and I wasn't going to do that. And finally you called me and said, hey, I got a copy of Big Book of Madness. You want this? And I said, yes! So I grabbed it, and I've played three times now. I've played two players and a three player. So, it's a neat game. It's really kind of a set collection, like deck building. I don't know. You get these cards, and you're trying to remove these curses that all have colors. It's basically focused around the four elements. Earth, fire, air, water. And I get air and water confused. So you're drawing cards from your deck, and then you're trying to play these cards very puzzly. You have spells you can cast using those cards as well, so there's a lot of different things going on. And then there's a stack of madness cards that get added to everybody's deck, and they're basically a dead card. And you don't want that deck to run out, so you can cure them by putting them back in the deck. And you have to flip through six pages of monsters and sometimes suffer their bad effects if you can't get rid of everything that those monsters put out for curses. Otherwise, you get to the last monster, and you have to defeat him for the end game condition. So, definitely an interesting game. I've liked it. It was longer than I anticipated each time. You know, it's run an hour and a half to 2 hours, and really thought it was quite puzzling. Like, oh, you could do that, and I could do this, and then you could do that, because you can give actions to other players on your turn, and cards are very heavy resources because drawing cards is not easy to do except at the end of your turn. But if you play your cards off of your turn, then you don't necessarily get them back. So it's interesting, but I definitely can see the more I play it, those you can buy more spells, and you can really make some strong combos with those, and that seems interesting. The last time I played two-player with Larry, he really had like this crazy combo where he's going into his deck, and he was just removing 2 to 3 curses every turn. And they're somewhere between 2 and 5 or 3 and 5 on the board. So he could almost clear out a monster himself, and then I was just there to kind of pick up. So that was kind of interesting, but we were able to beat it. But I only beat it that 1 out of 3 times because we played it together once. We got towards the end, but it felt the whole time like we were kind of on the losing end of the stick. Those madness cards were going quick with 3-player, so.
Yeah. Did you guys play on the hardest setting?
Yeah, we did.
2-player?
We played 2-player on the hardest setting. The first time I played beginner, played with you guys on medium, and then I played the third time on hard. I still think there's something to the game. It's not one of those ones where I feel like, I beat it, put it on the shelf. Like, yeah. I still felt like the puzzle was there. It was solid. And there's a lot of replayability with which spells come out. I could see in time, you know, it could get old because even though you kind of seen the spells or you've seen the combos and you go for them and just how things work. But you shuffle up, those monsters are different every time. So, I mean, really, it's a different game. Just the structure's always the same. So it's when does that structure get old? Which, 3 games? No. We'll see at 10 games, you know, where it's at. But I definitely thought it was worth that time of, you know, chasing it down within a contained thing. If this became some kind of 5-year-old out-of-print game that I paid $90 for, no way. You know what I mean? But at the point I got it, it was worth it. So that's Big Book of Madness, Yellow Games.
All right. So the first one I want to touch base on is La Granja from Stronghold Games. I think we kind of did like a brief run through like at the Gen Con episode. So quick overview, it's like a farming simulation style game. Like you're building up your own tableau, which is kind of representing a farm. You're adding like all these crops to it or adding like different helpers or extending it or, you know, just picking up, like trying to fulfill different orders basically. And then you're kind of delivering them to the market and scoring points that way. But I mean, like each card has multiple functions, so you could either play it on your tableau as, you know, that field or that helper or that extension, you know, so you're going through, you're doing all that to try to get points from delivering these goods. And then I guess one of the major parts of the game, you've got this like dice drafting area where you roll 2 times the number of players plus 1, like all these dice, and then you allocate them to different actions. So like the 1 will let you get pigs, the 2 will get you like some resources or cards or whatnot, so on and so forth, all the way down to 6. And then it goes around in turn order. You draft a die, and then it goes to the next person. They pick one and do the action as you take it. You know, so you do that, and it kind of goes through till you're left with one die remaining, and then everyone gets to do that action. You know, so you do that, and then you send your goods to the market or to these different, like, these different buildings that, you know, get you different things as the game progresses. But I don't know. I think I liked it back at the Gen Con episode. And I think just playing it recently has really kicked it back into mind as this game is really fun. Like, I am glad that we got this back to the table, and you know, there's so much variety there. Like you feel like you're playing a completely different game based on what you get for your hand, what you're trying to do. Like all these different helpers have like very unique effects that they give you. So it really kind of gives you a starting point to head down this road. And I think that's one of my favorite elements from a game, where it's kind of giving you like a structure to work your strategy off of, rather than like just being completely open. I really like kind of being given this task of how do you get the most points from doing this? And this is what your hand is, this is what your limitations are. Try to figure this style out and figure out how to, you know, how to use this. So I don't know. I really did enjoy La Granja, and I think that's up there for me right now as, you know, one of my most anxious to get to the table again. Like, probably so one of my top games at the moment.
He's admitting it. He's telling us a top game. Finally, nice.
I've said others, right? Maybe not.
I think you admitted to Roll for the Galaxy.
Yeah, Roll for the Galaxy, Kanban.
Oh, yeah.
La Granja, Lord of the Rings LCG.
That's a given.
Yeah.
That should be everybody's
favorite. The next, the one that I'm going to talk about later is up there, too. So.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I really like La Granja. You scared me. You were like, I liked this back then. I thought there was a butt. I was like, no! Because that was definitely that game day we had a while ago.
Yeah.
That was like my favorite game from that day.
Yeah.
That was just really fun. We all ended up really close. All felt like we were moving that. I do like that whole, you know, ooh, I get to pick my cards and that sets up my strategy. But it really does make the first play hard and new players, it's tricky on them. Of like, you know, sometimes I have to say, just play these here. Like, I'm not even thinking of La Granja in specifics, but others, like, I think of, like, Seasons where you have to draft to open, or you've got me with Dominaire up here opening that, and it's like you draw eight cards and pick three to start with, and that could just be overwhelming. So there's that element. But I also love that dice draft. I feel like every time that last die is left, I'm not even counting on that or planning it. I'm like, ooh!
Yeah.
It's like a free present. Like, you get a pig. I don't even need pigs. This is great. I'll take a free pig. So I feel like that's really fun because it's like I'm not even really thinking about it sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's just a free item. And that just, I don't know, it feels good. Unlike something like Misery Farm where you just take the punishment, you know? Like, oh, I can't do anything with this action or whatever.
You're referring to Agricola?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. All
right.
It's just nice to just be like, oh, you just get this extra thing. Like, you know?
Yeah,
which is neat there.
And I mean, I've played it 2, 3, 4, like, it's, you know, all these different player counts, and it's scaled really well. I guess the one downside that I've kind of felt from the game, it does feel very fiddly. Like, you know, it's a very open economic game. Like, you can trade stuff for, like, you know, you can sell stuff at any time, you can buy stuff at any time, and it's very open. And I think, like, that really forces you to have a few plays under your belt. Like, there are a lot of times to get, like, victory points or goods or whatever, resources, stuff like that. And I feel like the flow of the game kind of leads you away. Like, it almost feels like, oh, I forgot to get this, like, 2 turns ago. Like, I think, or I can't remember if I got it, like, something like that, where it's just, like, you really have to kind of get the structure down and play it a few times so you know, like, I'm getting this here, and I feel good about it. Like, I know this is actually what I should have.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that I feel like, you know, getting a few more plays under my belt would help with. And it could be a downside to someone that just is starting off, because I know it does, like, the structure of it does feel a little open. And if you're playing with people who have played it a lot, it could move a lot faster than you need it to go.
Yeah.
So. You know, it's just one of those ones where you need to take a breath and kind of make sure you're going to every part of each turn. So.
Nice. Awesome. All right, next up for me is Through the Ages, A New Story of Civilizations, which is CGE and also Eagle Griffin. So this is a Vlada Kvadl game, and it's a civ building game. But it's all card drafting. So your civilization, there's no board, you're not traveling, you fight. It's a little more abstract than, you know, my military units move into your space and we roll dice and all that. You have different military power. But I won't beat around the bush here. This is competing for being my favorite game of all time. So I really like this game. My favorite game is Terra Mystica. And I think, I was talking to my wife about this, I think if I went and played Terra Mystica right now, I'd go, okay, that's my favorite game. And then if we played Through the Ages, no, that's my favorite game. And then, so I think it's whatever is most recent on my brain is going to rise to the top there. I also really like Lord of the Rings LCG, that's up there. But I definitely think I like Through the Ages better than Argent, which was my number 3.
But didn't you most recently play Through the Ages?
I did.
But you're saying Terra Mystica is your favorite game?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just saying,
you think it might
if I
be...
go back, I think I would then solidify it, but then I'd play the next one. But either way, these are right up there. So what do I like? I love the drafting of cards. It's the further down the line you can get in, but you have a set number of actions. And so it's basically like action points. And I can say, I want that card all the way down the end, or I really need to get this card. Or I even remember we played recently and you drafted a card. I don't know, there were kind of two of the same, and you drafted the later one down the line so that I wouldn't get it, and you'd push the other one out, because at the end of your turn, the cards in the front of the row move down the line. Again, it scales great, And this is one that you would think, oh, it's better with 3 and 4. It's really good with 2. Because with 2, the front 3 cards always go away. So it keeps it moving. It's not, you know, it's still a very long game. But with 3, 2 cards go away. And with 4 people, only 1 card goes away. But of course, by the time it gets back around to you, that's, you know, 4 cards that have come off the table. But I love, you can change your strategy mid-game. You almost have to. So it's like, you're going after military, but then you switch and you're like, I'll go for this peaceful thing. In 2-player, there's a little bit less of changing because there's like leaders all the way throughout. And so one leader may be focused on theaters for like the second age. And then there's one in the third age that also focuses on theaters. And in 2-player, you just kind of, well, I'm going for that strategy, so I'll grab that same leader. So there's some of that sticks out there. But it moves. There's so many decisions to make. But they just feel rich and exciting. Like, they're positive. It's like, if I don't get that, then I'll get this. There's lots of good cards out there. You're thinking in the moment, but you're thinking about the next turn. But you don't have to think too far down the line, which I think is something that I struggle with. Like, I like that idea of I'm thinking 7 turns out, but I know I'm not very good at chess. So I know that I don't do well with that. And I don't have the patience to stick with something for 7 turns. So you definitely think ahead, but I don't think it's too far. It doesn't feel too far down the line. So, I mean, what's its drawback? It's long. We played it 2-player, 2.5 hours. We played it 4-player in 6 hours. I don't know if I've played it 3-player recently. I did way back in the day in the other edition. But that's one of the things you got to know, like, even if you know the cards, which I'm getting there. I look at a card and I don't have to read the text as much now. I know what they do. So that definitely speeds it up. But I can't see it, even if both people knew all the cards, really with 2 going under 2 hours. That would be tough. But it'd be nice to get a 4-player game to under 4 hours and feel like it was manageable. You know what I mean? So I could see that piece. I know some people say, so play it online. You can do like board gaming online and play it if you want to play 4, because then it'll move all the cards for you and keep everybody going. I don't think I have that in me. I don't think I have the board gaming online. I feel like the reason I'm playing is to tangibly touch the cards and smell the pieces and stick things in my ears and spend time with people, which is actually funny because when we're playing a heavy Euro, I tend to still have idle chatter going on with the person who's trying to think about what they're doing, because to me, that's an element of board gaming is, but, you know, when you're playing 4, it's nice because one person's thinking and the other, you know, you can.
And you're talking to the other 2 people.
Conversing with the other people who should be thinking about what their next turn is. But anyway, Through the Ages, I think it's a must play for everybody. Length is an issue. It's not a family game. Brian's making a face at me, so you're not sitting down with your young children to play it, but I really think it's a must play for everybody. I think it's
you just said that you, yeah, I don't know if it's a must play for everybody though.
It's a must try for everybody is what I mean.
If you appreciate that type of, like, I could see people not
sure I could see people, well, I think length would be the biggest issue. If it was 45 minutes, I think most people would like it. Anywho, yeah. Through the Ages. Check it out, new edition from CGE.
All right, so I guess I wanted to touch base on 5 Tribes, which is a Days of Wonder game. That was another one that we recently got back to the table. Kind of, not really, like, it's like a Mancala sort of worker placement style game. You know, so you've got this grid of all these tiles, which are representing different areas. You know, and they, each area is kind of associated with like a specific action or something like that. And it also has a point value. So you've got all these different colored meeples out. You know, usually it starts off, each tile has 3 meeples. They could be the same color. They could be different. Like, they tend to be like 3 different colors or like a mix of those. You know, so you, on your turn, you're basically picking up all the meeples from one square, you know, and placing them in like adjacent squares. So in like a Mancala sort of way where you put one in, you know, like one space, and then you have to go to another space and keep going down the down the row. Or you can adjust it accordingly. But it's that Mancala thing where you're picking up a group of meeples and placing them in all these different tiles. So wherever the last meeple is going to be placed, it has to at least match one meeple, like, of the same color in the new tile that you're putting it on. You know, as long as you can do that, it's a legal move. And then you get to remove those meeples and take specific actions based on a couple things, like, you know, what the color is and then what's on the tile itself. So you get a couple actions for each placement or whatnot. And it goes around, you're doing this, you're getting all these different, like, you know, resources, like you're trying to collect sets, or you could be collecting djinns, which give you, like, special abilities that you can use. You kind of go around, and it keeps going like that till there are no more legal moves on the board. And if you've, I guess I should say, like, one of the big things with this game, you're trying to, like, score these different tiles. If you remove all of the meeples from one tile,
Yeah. You
get that as a point scoring tile for the end game.
And it can't be taken away from you. There's no
right. Removing
that from you.
And, you know, it's going like that. I guess another huge element of this is each turn you're bidding for turn order with victory points, basically. Because the currency of the game is in victory points. So you're going to be bidding each turn for your turn order, you know, and you might see something out there that's really good, so you might want to bid a little higher, and then there aren't really many other good moves out there, so, you know, no one else really needs to pay, but you'd really need to get that to, like, pay victory points to get a better move on your turn. And I think that's a really neat balancing act where you are spending those points to try to, like, you know, do something maybe marginally better than what you've spent, but you're doing it to, like, affect everyone else, and you're trying to go toward your objective, like what you're trying to do for your end game scoring. And I don't know, I don't feel like I've done this justice from, like, my explanation. I think it's a lot easier, like, visually for this game, because it doesn't, I was trying to, like, think of the theme for it going into this, and I never consider it for this as, like, a huge element. Like, there are all these different tribes in this city, and they're kind of, I don't know if they're, like, vying for control of it.
I think they're obsessed with Mancala, so they decide to play a live-action Mancala game in their city.
You could take Brant's word for that.
I think that's the theme. Or excessive leapfrog, maybe?
Well, I mean, all these different colored meeples are representing different tribes, you know, of Nakala. So, I don't know. Besides that, it doesn't really feel like the theme is, like, it's oozing with this direct theme that I can kind of tell you. Once you see it, it's, like, a very visually appealing game, and it plays really smoothly. Like, you know, sometimes you can get caught up in, like, an analysis paralysis sort of turn where you're trying to figure, like, the best possible thing that you can do, like, the best possible move you can make. And then you probably forget something, or you don't see something, and then you're kicking yourself as the next person is like, oh, this was so obvious. I can just do this,
yeah,
and score, like, a ton of points.
Or you leave something for somebody else. That's right. The one that bothers me even more. Ooh, I just got 10 points. Oh, thank you. Set me up for 20. Ah!
Yeah. But I don't know. After playing this again recently, it's definitely one that feels like it's held up. You know, like, I think I played this originally, like, a while ago, so it wasn't, I hadn't played as many games, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But after playing it again and playing all these other games, it's definitely one I want to keep playing, and it feels like it keeps that fresh factor or whatever. And they also did announce another small expansion or whatnot that should be coming out shortly, like later on this year, I believe.
Yeah, it's just a couple cards that get thrown in.
Yeah, which I'm all for. I mean, I love anything like that. We did play with the expansion that came out last year.
Artisans of Nakala, is that what it is?
I think so. And that does add a good amount. It adds some new tiles and, like, a new color for the meeples, which people have kind of been upset about, thinking it's like a sixth tribe sort of thing. But I don't know. It's still, I really do like it with the expansion. I wouldn't hate playing it with just the base game, but I don't think there's, like, a reason not to just throw that in.
I was going to say, even with a first-time gamer, you just throw it in. It's just one more thing for them to figure out. I don't think the game is quite accessible enough to be a gateway game. It is to manipulate and to actually do the mechanics of the game, but I think you would trounce somebody who's playing for the first time.
Yeah, I mean...
So, because it's got enough weight to those decisions. So, but I, other than that, I think throwing the expansion in just makes sense because it's just more. It's just better, and it's not... It doesn't really add length to the game. I guess there's more tiles, which could add a little, but, you know, it's not significant.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it fitting in that, like, you know, not bringing someone necessarily into the hobby, but someone that's already got their foot in the door,
sure,
that next step up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... I think it's got enough of, like, a good enough pace to it where you could just have someone come in, you know, like, out of the blue, like, just hop right into it and enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
But, like you're saying, like, I think if people are on the same skill level or they know what they're looking for, it can definitely help them. I know, like, the first time I played with you, actually, like, when you kind of taught us the game, or taught me the game, we were playing, and then there was something that you recognized pretty quickly, and all of a sudden, you collected, like, a ton of points based on...
Oh, I remember that, yeah. The builders?
Yeah,
and it was just, like, a shutdown turn, yeah.
Right, so it was just like, oh my goodness, I wasn't even paying attention to, like,
right,
to watch out for this, and I don't think it's something that happens consistently enough where, like, it's something that could sneak in there as... this huge point swing that there's no way to catch up to. And yeah, you have to be aware of that. You can't just let someone run away with it like that. So,
right.
I guess this does suffer a little bit from a larger player count where one person could set up your opponent with something better. Like, and there's nothing you can do to stop that.
Yeah.
So
that's seven wonders.
Like
effect.
You're saying. Yeah. So it does have that in it. But I think this is one that, like, I can go into just thinking, okay, I'm going to try something and see how it does. It might not win. It might not even come, like, bring me in close to first, but it's just something where you can kind of do it and see what happens.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. It's definitely got the, like, multiple paths to victory, or even just the fun of not victory. Like, I came in third trying this strategy, but it was fun to just see what happens if I just beat that strategy into the ground, or what if I diversify, you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
it's interesting on that front. The drawback for this game is it's my number one AP game. I analyze the crap out of this game, and it bothers me more than you guys. Because you've always said, like, it doesn't really bother, your turns aren't that long, but yours, because I'm so used to not APing that it's like, oh my gosh, this is more than 30 seconds, this is awful. And so, but, you know, I'm still looking, and there's so many iterations, and you know, I think the other part I look is, what am I going to leave for the other player? So it's not just, oh, there's 17 points, I'll grab that. Oh, but that leaves 15 for the next, so maybe, So they go back to the drawing board, and so that AP gets to me.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, though, because it'll be like your turn for 5 seconds, and you'll be very apologetic. Like, sorry, guys.
I have no idea.
I just can't, you know. And you can see that. It's just like it triggers for something in you.
So. Yeah, well, it's got that tactical element. A lot of people say, like, you have to wait for your turn. And so even though you're looking at the board and trying to somebody pick something up, you're like, okay, we gotta go back to the drawing board. So
yeah,
you know, a little bit of waiting, but no, it's definitely very fun.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you don't get frustrated. Yeah. In Five Tribes, you definitely can miss something, and you often will.
Yeah.
I think last game we played, there was like a wooden token on the board that was blocking like a meeple. So I couldn't see you know, this thing. And then all of a sudden, like, I was the last one to go or something, and then all of a sudden, next turn, someone's, like, bidding really high, and it's like, oh, there must have been a good move that I just had no, you know, I just didn't see it.
Yeah.
And you definitely have to figure out how to get, like, a decent amount of points each turn. Mm-hmm. Like, it does kind of build off itself where you should be trying to average a set number of points based on, like, what everyone else is doing at the table, too. But... you can't, like, you just kind of have to have a feel for that. You can't just say, I need to score this number of points or else I'm out of it. So,
and Days of Wonder, so the production is top notch.
Yeah,
the pieces are awesome.
Yeah,
nice.
That's Five Tribes from Days of Wonder,
and that's what's on our table. So, let us know what's on yours. All All right, we're going to move on with our discussion topic for today. We want to talk about gaming marathons. So we want to talk about, you know, one of those play all day kind of events, or even, you know, maybe a convention that you go to that's really focused on gaming, where you just, you get up, you have a pot of coffee, you play games to the wee hours of the morning, you go to bed, you get up, and then you have a pot of coffee and you play games to the wee hours of the morning.
Or Mountain Dew or something.
Whatever is, you know, in your mini fridge in the hotel. So, thinking about what's the benefit of a gaming marathon? Like, why should somebody, instead of just saying, hey, we'll have people over and play two games, what's the benefit to saying, hey, I'm going to attend this gaming marathon or host a gaming marathon and those kind of things? So what do you think some of the benefits are there?
The benefits for playing or hosting?
Yeah.
I mean,
why should somebody say, yeah, I'll go do a gaming marathon or I'll go to an event or...
Yeah, well, I mean, I know the ones that we've had at the store have a good amount of activity. You know, mm-hmm. it's definitely creating some visibility to the hobby. It's getting people kind of engaged in games that they might not necessarily see, you know, on a regular basis. So I guess from my perspective, I'm mostly coming at it from like the 24-hour events where we can run something that's a little bit off the wall. You know, we could run code games like we did the other day. Like, we could play Flick 'em Up and just have like something that people walk by and it's like, oh, that looks cool. Like, what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's been something that we're kind of learning as we go along, just trying to like add some more of that style to it where it is free to play. Like it, people can just hop in whenever. And I don't know. I think a lot of the gaming companies are kind of figuring that out too. It's getting to a point where the games that are coming out really need to be top notch. Like, they really are competing with the other game companies just to get something that's a really quality product out mm-hmm. there that people are wanting to participate in. They're wanting to like see it's visually appealing, you know, with like all these different shows that are going on. Like, you know, if it's the Dice Tower playing stuff with like a live stream, or Late to the Table, who's been doing some live streaming, or like, you know, even something like Tabletop with Will Wheaton. Like, you're getting all these games that need to have really good production. They need to be visually appealing. They need to like have a good flow to the game, and they just need to be good games too. But I don't know, it has been great for us just to kind of increase that, like, that participation and activity, especially at the store.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess that kind of...
No, I think that makes perfect sense. You were thinking from the store perspective, what's beneficial about these. I mean, also thinking from the store is, you know, I've had gaming marathons that are associated with charity.
Yeah.
So it's great there. You can tie in people's interest in playing board games and being like, oh, well, I'll come and I can give to this charity. And it's like, you know, I can do both those things at the same time. So I think that's good. From kind of the consumer perspective, and not just my own, even for you attending some of the events, I think what's great is you get to play games that you wouldn't necessarily otherwise. So you could play a game that's with 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
You can play a 12-hour game of Mega Civilization, because that's the location. I mean, 12 hours in of itself is a marathon, right? But those kind of things can happen, you know, in terms of that. On a like non-store related gaming marathon, we've done some where it's just, hey, we're gonna start at 6 a.m. and play ourselves, you know, and knock out these games. I think you can finally get some of those games to the table that you've talked about playing, Twilight Imperium 3 or a Rune Wars, or just a big heavy Euro that, you know, finally Kanban that can finally come out and everybody can try it, or even you can just knock a bunch out in succession. Just, oh, we're going to, you know, play all these, or like we've done it where it's like somebody's setting up the next game or two or seven on the tables around you, and you could just jump one game to the next, and you could do that because you kind of have this time carved out, you know, it gives you that, and you could just keep moving on that front. So
yeah, it definitely gives you that structure, you know, and that's great from a few perspectives. You know, like, I'm at the point in my life where I can't just, you know, hang out and play games every night of the week or something. Like, there are, you know, there are responsibilities and, you know, just with like a kid and a family and stuff like that. Like, I wouldn't want to be doing that every night of the week either. So this is something where I can just, you know, say, Rachel, I'm going to be doing this. Like, this is important. I'm going to be doing this to, like, you know, help the store, help the community, but also for myself, like, there's something that I'm taking away from it too, where it's just a great time, it's a great atmosphere, and it gives me some time to, you know, network a little bit, play some games, and just, you know, keep building on that community. So
yeah, I was gonna say that too. You get to play with people that different people, like when you go into a store, a gaming marathon, or maybe even a convention, you just get that opportunity to play, you know, with different people. If you show up at just a game night, your group may show up, you have this game in mind, you finish, oh, other people are playing, you set up another one, you play that, time to go. Mm-hmm. So you didn't get that opportunity to kind of play with some other people. That's going to be more of my wheelhouse, because I really like to, you know, play with lots of, some people are, you know, that's not in their comfort zone. But even if it's not your comfort zone, this is an opportunity to kind of break that and know, hey, maybe I'll find this game over here, or, you know, finding the joy in something like you were saying, with Flick 'em Up, like, oh, I didn't know that could be so fun till I was at an all-day event and it just made sense to go play this, or Pitch Car, or something that gets set up that you just, it wouldn't have been in your normal rotation, but because it's there and there's more people and they're encouraging you, you go for it and find these different things. So
yeah, and even besides that, it's like, it's also just great from, you know, like, everyone has a busy schedule now, like, you know, like, all these people have their own lives, their own things that they're committed to. Putting something on the schedule, you know, real early can also give them time to just say, like, they're committing to this as well. Where, you know, if there's someone that I haven't been able to get a game in with because, like, you know, they have responsibilities and I have responsibilities, all of a sudden everyone can kind of meet on this day or this marathon or whatever. And, you know, there's going to be time to play for, you know, a good amount. Obviously not everyone's going to be able to make it, but it at least gives a better chance at, you know, getting a game to the table with, you know, a few more people that I wouldn't normally get to play with. So
nice. I think that's our ideas and thoughts on gaming marathon. So, you know, definitely check out stuff that's around you, check out stuff we have going on at the store, and whatnot, but definitely encourage people to go out and try a gaming marathon. Obviously, like Brian was saying, it's got to be something that fits in your schedule. Don't, you know, cancel everything you have for a day or say no to the family, but set it up ahead of time so that it'll work out and say, okay, right, you know, looking a month out or whatever, this is going to be time I'll set aside for what I'm doing. I know last year, I think we kind of all, like, for Father's Day, we said, hey, as my Father's Day gift, it'd be fun to have a day. Yeah. We could do that. So you kind of use it in that sense, and that, you know, I mean, depending on people, it can create goods and bads, but you know, it's kind of a free gift, but the gift of time, which is great, and the ability to play games, which is fun. So just ways to be creative in that sense, which I think are good. So
coming off of it, it feels like I haven't played any games, and it was like, you know, just a little while ago that we had the
huge
session.
Yeah, then you tend to follow up with a lot of empty days.
Yeah, then you go into this lull and you're coming off of that high from being, you know, so engaged like the entire the entire day. And then all of a sudden it's like you're not playing as consistently or whatnot. But I wouldn't, you know, change anything about that. Like it's still a great day to, you know, be a part of. And, you know, we'll keep doing them, which is probably, like, the key. Like, as long as they keep happening, people still, they'll have an opportunity to come. So
make sure you eat. Make sure you drink water. Make sure you have enough sleep to do these kind of things. But, you know, keep all that stuff, keeps you going, even though maybe you have to say no to one game, so you can make sure you take care of some of those things. Definitely check out a gaming marathon. It's really a lot of fun. Pulls you out of your comfort zone, but it's totally worth it. So, those were our thoughts. All right, kind of our new segment here. We've been going with what we love about ... and we've talked about some different types of games. So now we want to talk about dexterity games. We've already referenced some of these today. So dexterity games would be games that have a dexterity element to them. So they tend to be shorter, lighter games. For the most part, you know, involving things like stacking or flicking things or maneuvering pieces or moving parts, you know, or maybe even electronic moving parts. So I think of games like we referenced Flick 'em Up, where you're flicking wooden discs at other people's characters to knock them over.
Or like Catan with all the, like, the road.
Catan trying to get the road pieces on the board.
Stacking them. Like when it's not your turn.
That might be a euro. Now you're making me draw blank. I was thinking of something like Lupin Chewy or Lupin Louie.
Yeah.
Where you got him going around and, you know, lighter style game. And even some, you know, crazier
coconuts,
yeah, where there's kind of a flinging element. So lots of different unique things, balance and that rattlesnake one with the snake eggs is really good. So I'll start with what I love about dexterity games. So first off, they just have those. They have those moments that I think are in Ameritrash style games, just those memorable moments and those, like, everybody's watching you, and if you succeed, you are praised, and if you fail, people are so excited and cheer. So there's just going to be cheering naturally involved. So I really like that element. They tend to move quick. You know, it's your turn, my turn. So even with 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people, odds are my turn's coming up. It's not a long wait. It's not thinky, so it's just people are trying to maneuver their piece or whatever they have to do, and then it gets back to me. So I like that. And then as a whole, the game is quick. It's usually something that you could jump in, you could jump out, go grab food, go to the bathroom, come back in the next one. So it's really useful along those lines. And generally, anybody can play. I mean, there could be some limitations for certain players, but for the most part, anybody could try it. And, you know, usually there's a learning curve, but they're not super steep. So people, you know, my first game didn't go well. I know what I'll do next time. They try that next time and build from there. So that's what I love about dexterity games. What do you love?
Yeah, I mean, the pacing is definitely key. But, you know, even besides that, it's really enjoyable just to kind of try to do these different things. You know, all these games are designed to challenge you, to kind of get you doing something active and, you know, just trying to build up of whatever the system is. And I don't know, I always feel bad trying to get these to the table. Like, I feel like, you know, if we have some time to play a game, like, most people would probably want to play something that's got a little bit more depth, if you want to say that. Like, if you want to call it depth, I guess. But I don't know, I would be happy just to play these a bunch. You know, they're great for events and whatnot, too, where, you know, you set something up and it can almost run itself at a certain point where, I guess when we have stuff that we're teaching to, like, you know, a bunch of people that don't necessarily play a lot of games, all these dexterity games are very easy to just, you know, have available. They're easy to teach, easy to play, and people get engaged with them really quickly. And then, obviously, like, you can kind of transfer over to, like, something with a little bit more to it, like some strategy and whatnot. But they're easy enough to get to the table. A lot of them are, like, you know, compact. They're like, they're easy to transport, fun to play. And I don't know, I guess, like you were saying, like, you know, coconuts is great, like Click-Clack Lumberjack, or, you know, even something like Crokinole, Tumble and Dice. There are quite a few that are up there, and they're really fun just to, like, to play with whoever walks through the door.
Yeah, they definitely have, like, an appeal. Like, there's something that somebody will look at and go, oh, I could do this. As opposed to when you have, you know, a sprawling space empire game. People go, oh my gosh, look at all the pieces. This must be, like, risk. This is going to take hours. Or you have a drier looking non-thematic game and people go, oh my gosh, like, what are you doing? Like, oh, you're just thinking like chess for 2 hours. My brain's going to hurt. I can't do that. But a dexterity game is like, while I'm passing by, I'll try that. Yeah. Ooh, that's harder than it looks. I'll try again. Ooh, yeah. That's harder than it looks. But, you know, there's this element of, oh, I will be good at that, you know, off the bat, or I'll try that. So I think it kind of draws people in. Plus, usually components on these days, especially, more like what you were saying, is they really have to pick up this component quality. And so they tend to be something to look at. I think of Flick 'em Up. I mean, that is just pure eye candy. We went to Gen Con and they had the oversized pieces and the people wearing cowboy hats. I mean, how could you not? How could you not just want to jump in line and try that? You're just like, oh my gosh. Like,
unless did we
you
try that at Gen Con?
Bad in cowboy hats.
Did you play it
I
at
sat
Gen
next
Con?
To it when oh, I was okay. playing Code of Nine in the pandemic tournament.
So you didn't hop in when... Never mind, sorry.
It's a really busy table.
Yeah.
Also, some of them, you know, they have a lot of different elements. Like, oh, you can switch it up this way. Like, a lot of games are becoming this way. When we were kids, you bought the game, it was in the box, you opened it up, it played the same way every time. And the joy was just in the random factor. Mm-hmm. But now there's a lot of variability in these games, and they it's extended to dexterity games. Great one I think of for a gamer's dexterity game is that Catacombs. Mm-hmm. So it's actually like a dungeon crawl where you're flicking discs and you're gaining powers and weapons and going through multiple rooms, and there's different powers associated with heroes and villains. And so it has that element, and then it kind of adapts. Every time you play is different, and you can play a one-off campaign and another one. So that definitely happens. Flick 'em Up has multiple scenarios for how you can set things up and have more things happen.
And like with Flick 'em Up, that was one where we did break it out for Tabletop Day. And it wasn't like we needed this like in-depth rules refresher. It was just like, set it up, make it look cool, right. And hop right into the game.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the way with... A lot of these, you can kind of register, like commit it to memory because it doesn't take a lot to remember, yeah. You know, whereas something like Dominaire, which you're looking at, is something from like a while ago that, you know, isn't completely fresh. So it's like you need to go through a refresher for the rules. You need to kind of make sure you're not missing little pieces of the game. Whereas with like, you know, Click Clack Lumberjack or Flick 'em Up, you can just like hop right in. Start playing right away, and it doesn't really take any time.
Yeah, they're almost games where if they have intricacies, they're a hindrance to the game. You don't want it to have a lot of parts. It's like, whatever, do this way. And you can just make up the rules as you go. You know, as long as everybody's having fun, it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, it's right. not a big deal. Whereas in other games, you need the intricacies because they are the game.
Yeah.
You know, that piece of, oh, this is... how we are competing over these little pieces that all go together as one big puzzle. Mm-hmm. But in a dexterity game, you don't want all those you know, necessities. It can still have variability, it can still have parts, but you can almost add them as you go or figure them out as you go.
Yeah, I wonder if that's kind of in the lines with, like, Ascending Empires, which we played a long time ago, which is, like, you know, a deeper Euro-style... mixed with dexterity, and I think that's kind of coming from the perspective of maybe it's a hindrance to the game, at least to our perspective,
right?
You know, because we wanted this like really fun, like 4X style flicking dexterity game, right. And it was really just like I think we were wanting more, and it didn't really feel like it had the best of either world, you know, it didn't feel like the best strategy game, it didn't feel like the best dexterity game, mm-hmm. It was kind of middle of the road. To a point where we haven't wanted to play it since, and I don't foresee that. Like, maybe just because it's been so long, it might be like, maybe we didn't take the right thing out of this. From my perspective, I could see that happening.
I'm not going back. I'm never going back.
There are other games.
The past is in the past.
But there are other games that have left a much worse taste in my mouth than that game. I remember not liking it. Trying it a second time, not liking it then. But I could see playing it a third time at least.
Yeah.
No.
And then report back to us how that went. Because I'm all set.
Well, you'll be there, right?
Who knows? All right. So that's our thought on dexterity games. So let us know. What are some of your favorite dexterity games? We named a bunch. I don't think we're going to go through and name our list because we said a lot of things that we like. But let us know. Email us. At portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. All right, let's talk about what's on the horizon. These are upcoming games, pre-orders, pre-sales, pre-adventuring, pre-joy. Yeah. Brian's going to bring us that news. Go ahead,
or new releases. Happy Salmon just came in from North Star Games, which is a really quick, fast-paced, party style game from, and that's Happy Sand and North Star Games that just came out. Age of Conan from Ares Games just came out. Like, we got that plus the like an expansion, so keep your eyes on that. That was one that had a lot of buzz a while ago, and it's finally getting out to the public. Dominion Empires is something that's coming up, another Dominion expansion, so people tend to love
love. Is that their 20th expansion? Are they having an anniversary like us?
I don't know. There are quite a few. But Wakatanka from Cool Mini or not, I don't know a whole lot about that, but that's one that's going to be coming out shortly.
Family bluffing game.
All right. Dice Heist from AEG. Another one that was announced for, you know, the coming month or so. The Ravens of Three...
Sahashri
from Osprey Games.
What else did Osprey do?
They just did Odin's Ravens.
Are they Spirits of the Rice Paddies?
No. I think that's Ape Games. They Osprey Games is also coming out with Escape from Aliens in Outer Space. I don't know much about it, but it looked interesting. I was kind of reading into the Board Game Geek entry for that. World's Fair 1893 from Renegade Game Studios. I know that's one you've got your eye on, Brandon.
Yeah, that looks like a really exciting, like, classic Euro style, you know, kind of an under an hour kind of family-ish type with good choices, good decisions. So I've seen a lot of good reviews on that, so I definitely want to get that to the table soon.
So we should be getting a pre-launch kit, you know, maybe next week, hopefully. I guess possibly the week that you're hearing this. I don't know. It should be middle of May, so hopefully we get that shortly. And then another one that's going to be coming up, The Grizzled at Your Orders, which is the expansion for The Grizzled from Cool Mini or Not. I'm looking forward to that one.
Supposed to have good two-player rules in it, too.
Yeah, so that's one I'm definitely looking forward to.
So Happy Salmon is in?
Happy Salmon is in.
All right, we got to try that on Sunday.
Okay.
That'll be a good one. So, nice. That sounds like...
Oh, funny. And Time Stories Under the Mask.
Ooh.
Also just came in.
Oh,
so
it makes me sad that we're so far behind on that.
Yeah, but we'll get that to the table.
If you haven't played Time Stories, you need to try Time Stories. A game everybody should play. I have to make my list of games everybody should play.
So maybe not the scenario that comes in the base game.
Yeah.
It's not as child-friendly,
well,
but it's...
You're right, yeah. When I say everybody, I'm not always talking kids, so...
Or everybody, then, for that matter.
Yeah. So, nice! Those are games that are on the horizon, so check them out. Alright, there we go! Episode number 20 of the Portal Gaming Podcast is complete. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It was a good time talking about dexterity games, talking about gaming marathons, and just some of our games. Had one of my all-time favorites in there through the ages, and I think you admitted an all-time favorite in there, La Granja. So there you go. Those are both games everybody should play. What do you think about that, Brian?
I think we're done with it.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll catch up with you soon. As always, check us out and stop by the store. We'd love to hang out. So until next time, I'm your host, The Brant.
And I'm your co-host, Brian.
And we hope you step into the portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 61 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on May 13, 2016. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
61 million. 71. Not that matters.